Hello and welcome to episode 50 of Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig. In this episode, we speak about indirect questions and we hear a travel story from our special guest, Nicola. You can see the show notes from this episode and translations of some difficult vocabulary from Nicola's story at inglespodcast.com/50. Hello and welcome to a special episode of Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig. I'm Craig.
And I'm Reza.
And today we have a special guest, don't we, Reza?
We do. By my side is my lovely companion, Nicola. Hello, Nicola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, Nicola, and welcome to the show. It's lovely to have you with us.
Thank you.
Nicola works with us at the British Council.
So let's dive in straight away with grammar. What do you think? We'd like to look this episode at some indirect questions. So maybe to start, we could ask the question, what are indirect questions and when would we use them?
Are you asking me directly?
I'm asking both of you pretty directly. Why do we use indirect questions? Why not just say, what's your name?
Are you asking me why we use indirect questions?
I am.
To be more polite, above all, I would say, is the first reason. Not the only reason, but to be more polite, to be more formal, sometimes to be more impersonal. All of those things. Can you think of any other things, Nicola?
Especially in writing. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, if you have maybe a bit of a difficult question to ask as well, something you're not too sure the other person wants to give you that information.
Something a bit sensitive,
a bit personal.
It kind of signals that the question is going to be sensitive, doesn't it? It's kind of a way of saying, here comes a sensitive question, sorry, I have to ask you this kind of thing.
Yeah, I feel comfortable about it, but I think I should ask you indirectly. So how do we form them? How do we make indirect questions?
Well, Craig, let's put it to the test, what you said about it being uncomfortable. Craig, how old are you? Is that a good way of saying
that's
that question?
That's a very direct question. How old are you? That would possibly be a question you'd want to make a little bit more polite, I think.
Well, as I'm much more polite than Reza, maybe I would say, would you mind me asking how old you are, Craig?
No, I wouldn't mind you asking. I'm 51.
Ah.
So that's an example of an indirect question.
Craig, would you ever ask a lady her age, directly or indirectly? I wouldn't.
No, I don't think I would. That's quite a sensitive question.
That's just a cultural tip from us, nothing to do with English language.
Maybe I'd say, you don't look old enough to have a teenage son, for example. So, one thing we should say is that indirect questions have the same word order as a statement, una afirmación. Mm-hmm. So what was your example? Your example was...
Would you mind telling me how old you are?
So how old you are has the same word order as a statement. A direct question, you'd have to change the word order. So you'd say, how old are you? So would you mind telling me how old you are is the indirect question.
Mm-hmm. And Nicola, you used, would you mind telling me? Mm-hmm. But can you think of some other ways of introducing an indirect question?
You could also say, could I ask you how old you are?
I'd be interested to know, perhaps.
Yes.
How old you are?
Instead of could, can, they're more or less the same, aren't they? In an indirect question, can you tell me, can I ask you, could you ask me, could I ask you, rather?
And then there's would you mind telling me, which with would you mind, you'd always use the gerund. Mm-hmm. So would you mind telling me how old you are? Would you mind telling me what you do for a living? Would you mind telling me where you live?
Or would you tell me, could you tell me, can you tell me how old you are?
Mm-hmm.
What about this one? Might I ask you how old you are?
Oh, that's
very
nice.
That's a very good one. Might I ask you?
That one's really quite polite and formal, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Or even more formal and polite, may I ask you? But people do use it, don't they?
Yes, it's a very common structure.
I was wondering if you could tell me. how old you are.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if you could tell me.
Yeah, that's very around the houses.
Mm-hmm. Can you think of any more very posh, polite, formal ones?
Do you have any idea?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Do you have any idea what time the next bus arrives?
Yes. As long as you don't say, would you have any idea how old you are? That would not come out well.
No.
That would not come out well. Implying that you're so old that you might not remember.
Not a good move, that one. Yeah. No.
But would you be so kind as to tell me how old you are? That's quite a
very
nice.
Oh, I want to start for that.
Would you be so kind as to tell me?
That's quite a long one.
Yeah. But I would occasionally use that if I were asking a stranger for help, for example. Would you be so kind as to tell me where the police station is, for example, mm-hmm. or how to get to the bus station, something like that?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Or yeah. if it's not too much trouble, would you mind telling me? Double indirect.
If you translate some of these into Spanish, they sound a bit crazy to Spanish ears, I think.
Is there a Spanish equivalent to indirect questions?
I think there are a few possibilities.
Well, I think just by using usted, you eliminate this need for going around the houses that the English do. It's using usted, you can get away with a lot, I think.
Yeah, that would be the polite form in Spanish.
Yeah.
So,
have you ever been stopped by a stranger in the street, for example, in Spain, and they've asked you something? I was quite shocked when I first got to Spain and someone drove past me in a car. They wanted to know where the, I think it was where the train station was, and they went, oye, jefe, estación de trenes. They were the only words they spoke. Oye, jefe, estación de trenes. No verbs even, not even a verb.
Oye, ¿dónde está? English. Oye, where's the train station?
Sounds a bit rude, doesn't it?
Oh, sounds terrible.
It does sound rude to our English ears. Yeah. We'd have to use an indirect question and say, would you mind telling, excuse me, not oye, but excuse me, would you mind telling me where the train station is? So what happens to the verb to be is an R in indirect questions.
Well, as you said, you follow the order of a positive sentence.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes at the end of the question. Would you mind telling me what your name is? Would you mind telling me where the station is?
Mm-hmm.
Because really, if you think about it, the would you mind bit, that's the question form bit. Would you mind, instead of you would mind, yeah, it's would you mind, that's actually formed as a question. But the second bit, what was your question?
Would you mind telling me where the train station is?
Where the train station is just the affirmative form. It's the first bit, would you mind, which is actually in the question form. Although the real question is, where is the train station? That's what you really want to know, isn't it?
And an important thing to remember, if you wanted to actually answer that question, you'd use the negative. You'd say no. Would you mind telling me? No, I wouldn't mind.
Yes.
Which would say, ¿te importa? No, no me importa. So the answer really is a no, it's a negative.
And I think Spanish people often get confused with that. I've tried that with Spanish people. I said, would you mind, blah, blah, blah. And they said, yes, meaning, yes, I'll answer you, but yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, I was like, oh, okay, sorry
see
for
me,
asking.
Si me importa, yes, I mind. And what happens, guys and girls, with do, does, and did? In indirect questions.
I think they disappear.
They disappear. An example would possibly be, do you know the time?
Yeah, nope. Do you know the time?
Could you tell me?
I wonder if you could tell me if you know the time, for example.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Although that is a bit long, isn't it? But
could you tell me what the time is?
Mm-hmm. No.
No.
Well, what about, do you have any children? Can I ask if you have any children? Something like that.
Yeah.
So you'd use if and whether with questions that are yes and no.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's another
good
point.
Yeah, exactly. Like
questions that don't have question words like what, when, why, how. Is that right? You'd use if or whether.
Yeah, so do you like chocolate biscuits, for example? Could I ask if you like chocolate biscuits?
Or could I ask whether you like chocolate biscuits?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So with words that have do, does, and did, you'd use if or whether.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, what, can we practice a bit? What about this? Would you mind if I asked a direct question This is just an idea. I ask a direct question. Craig, you convert it, so we practice our grammar, into an indirect question, and Nicola answers the question.
That's a wonderful idea. So you're going to ask me a direct question. I'm going to change it to an indirect question and ask Nicola, and Nicola's going to answer.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll count to three so that listeners can try it themselves before I give the indirect question.
Okay. Here we go. So these are questions for Nicola, but Craig's the man in the middle. Where were you born?
Nicola, would you mind telling us where you were born?
Not at all, Craig. I was born in London, North London.
Really? Which part?
Really? Close to Barnet. Okay. Whetstone?
There's another direct question that Craig's going to convert into indirect. What other places or countries have you lived in?
Nicola, we'd be interested to know what other countries you've lived in.
Okay, well, I've also lived in France and other places in England, in the north of England.
Do you speak French?
I do indeed.
How long were you in France?
I was there for a year and then another time for about 6 months.
If you won the lottery, what would you buy?
Nicola, would you mind telling us what you would buy if you won the lottery?
I wouldn't mind at all. I don't know.
You've never thought about that question. Never ever thought if you had an unlimited amount of money, what you'd do with it.
Unlimited? Well, it wouldn't just be one thing then. Big holiday with a family. Forget about work. Go travelling. Maybe, I don't know, buy a house somewhere.
Would you buy the house here in Valencia?
Maybe, but maybe a bit closer to the beach, I think. Or maybe have another house closer to the beach.
Why not? Have two.
One in the mountains.
Okay.
That'd be nice.
Another question.
Another question with two parts. What do you like most and least about teaching English?
Nicola, could you please tell us what you like most about teaching English? And would you also mind telling us what you dislike the most?
What I like most, I really enjoy the contact with students, personal relationships that you form with students, seeing them develop as well, and seeing them improve. And what I like least, probably the admin side of things, reports, teaching young children, having to write reports every term.
Many people say that, don't they?
That side of things is, yeah.
Yeah.
What attracted you to come and live in Valencia?
Nicola, could you explain what attracted you to come and live in Valencia?
Initially, I came to learn Spanish. And as a secondary thing, I came to see if I could live here. And it seems that I've done both. So...
Wonderful. So you came prepared to just give it a go for 6 months or a year and then perhaps go back to the UK.
Exactly. Yeah. Or move on to another place. If I wasn't happy here, try and find another place until I found somewhere I liked. And yeah, this was the first place and I'm still here. Didn't get very far.
And could you tell us how long you've been here? I'm not sure if we asked that before. How long have you been in Spain?
That's a bit of a direct question.
Would you mind telling us... Would you mind telling us how long you've been in Spain?
No, I wouldn't. I've been here 13 years now.
Well, 13 years.
And where were you before Valencia?
One second. Nicola, would it be possible to know... What was the question?
Where were you before Valencia?
Nicola, would it be possible to know where you were before Valencia?
Yeah, certainly. Before coming to Valencia, I had a year off. I was travelling around for a year around the southern hemisphere. Australia, Malaysia, Thailand, Indonesia.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yep. Okay. Well, we'd like to ask you a little bit about your travels, but before we do, anything more on indirect questions, or do you think we've covered it? Do you have any other comments, Reza or Nicola?
Would you mind if we called it a wrap there?
Called it a wrap. Wrap it up. Okay.
Because Critch has to be nosy as well, isn't it?
Yeah. With the excuse of English grammar. So, moving on to look at a little bit of vocabulary and hopefully find out a little more about Nicola, our special guest this episode, we'd like to speak a little about travel. Now, we did study some travel vocabulary in episode 13, so if you want to revise travel vocabulary, please go to inglespodcast.com/13. But let's talk to Nicola, because I think she's got an interesting story about travelling in Morocco.
Well, the destination should have been Benin in Africa. I was going there to do some voluntary work. But unfortunately, I got deported from Benin as...
Would you mind telling us why you got deported from Benin?
I'd rather not. Okay. No, it's fine. Rather absent-mindedly didn't realise that I needed a visa to get into Benin, that the trip had been organised by a charitable foundation, and nobody had told me, and I hadn't informed myself either, that I actually needed a visa to get into Africa.
So that was your responsibility. The charity organisation, it wasn't their responsibility to cover the visa for you?
It's kind of wasn't clear in the end. We accepted it was 50-50.
Okay.
After a few little discussions.
So what happened?
Basically, I got to Benin, I presented my passport, and then got promptly taken away by the security and put back on the aeroplane that I'd just arrived on, and got flown back to Morocco, which was the...
immigration?
It was the layover in Morocco from Benin to Gatwick, to London, to get back to London. So I arrived in a quivering mess.
But did you have to get off the plane in Morocco? Why didn't you just continue on to the UK?
No, I had to get off, I had to change. It was a connecting flight. So I had to change in Morocco. I came off the flight and had to try. My aim was to get back to Benin, so I went back to Morocco, went back to the airline in Morocco where I bought my ticket, and tried to negotiate getting back to Benin and trying to get my visa. So they said, "Oh, it's no problem. Oh, this is terrible. You're here for charity work. Go to Rabat and get your visa and come back tomorrow." Okay, I'll do that. So I did that, and I came back tomorrow, and there was a different person there, unfortunately, the following day, and the different person said, no, it doesn't work like that. You're going to have to pay for your flight to get back to Benin, which is approximately 800 euros.
Wow.
So as I had already spent a lot of money, and this was, you know, a volunteer project, I wasn't really willing to spend another 800 euros. So I did a lot of to-ing and fro-ing, a lot of discussing with the airline company, with the foundation, to try and get back to Benin and try and get them to pay for the ticket.
What did the charity organisation say? Surely they would be... Weren't they open to the possibility of paying the flight to get you there in order to start work?
They said they would pay, I think they said they would pay 50% of the... Actually, no, it wasn't clear. They weren't clear. What they wanted to do was they were trying to fight with the airline and trying to get the airline to pay for the ticket.
Yeah.
And they weren't 100% willing to pay for the ticket. So
you were stuck in Morocco.
I was stuck in Morocco. And I'd also... I hadn't lost my luggage. The airline had lost my luggage.
Oh, no.
So
it gets worse.
And unfortunately, I was in Casablanca in Morocco, and I was wearing... It was hot. It was summer. And all I had with me was a little vest top. A lot of the men didn't like that. So I got a lot of nasty stares at the airport. But I didn't have anything to change into. I ended up being stuck there for 5 days.
Good God. Where did you sleep?
I slept, there was a hotel very close to the airport, so I slept at the hotel. But I spent the whole day in the airport running around between the airport company, the airline, and then also wait on standby. I bought tickets. In the end, I agreed. I said, right, I'm going to buy a ticket and you're going to have to just refund me. Fingers crossed. So a couple of times I was on standby, but there was no seats left. It was middle of summer. It was really busy. So the flights were all full. But one of these times I bought the ticket, had to get the cash out of the cash point. And when I went to pay for the ticket, I realized instead of the 700 euros or equivalent that I'd taken out, I only had 350. And then I realized I'd left 350 in the cash withdrawal machine, point, just sitting there in the middle of the airport, all the 350 euros of cash. So I ran back downstairs to the cash point. The cash was not there.
Of course.
Why am I not surprised to hear that?
But yes, you will be surprised. I went up to the security man and I said, I don't suppose you've seen anything. I was in a mad rush. I left 350 euros in cash in the cash point. And he said, today's your lucky day. This man over here saw that you left the money. He took it and he gave it to me. And he said, if she comes back...
That's amazing.
Wow. Give her the money.
That's amazing.
That's great.
350 euros. Can you imagine what that's worth?
It's very heartwarming.
Especially in a country where 350 euros probably has got a higher value than it does in Europe.
Oh, much higher.
Sounds like a couple of months' wages in Morocco, perhaps.
Probably.
Or a month at least.
At least.
Wow.
Yeah. So that gave me a little bit of hope in the human race. Yeah.
That's a lovely story, really. That bit's lovely. That's really nice.
So the story has a happy ending.
No, in the end, I had to give up. There were no flights. I couldn't get on a flight. I ended up going back to London. That side of it was happy, but there was a very sad side to it. There was a lot of children in Benin that had been waiting for me. These classes had been organised. I organised material to take over. I had books and everything, and it never arrived.
So you didn't postpone it and go back at a later date?
To be honest, it kind of put me off.
Yeah.
But I still want to do it. Maybe I won't go back there, but I would still like to do something like that.
Would you both kill me if I said something really corny?
What?
Probably. So we could say that Nicola's never been in Benin.
Oh, God.
Although she did try to go, she's never been in Benin.
She's never
Can we
been,
say that?
She's never been in Benin.
Yeah.
No, she hasn't.
Okay, sorry. I'm being strangled. I apologise for that.
Isn't that a song, Begin the Begin?
Begin the Begin. But you have, though, been in Morocco this time on purpose for a holiday.
Oh, yes,
you?
Intentionally.
You did go intentionally, yes. Tell us about that. How was your pleasant trip to Morocco, the planned one? How was that?
The planned one was a lot better. I didn't need a visa for a start, although I did check. Mm-hmm. Every time I go on holiday now, I double check. We went to Marrakesh, and then we also did a little trip to the mountains and to the Sahara Desert and the camel trip and staying in a tent overnight in the middle of the Sahara Desert. Well, actually, in the end, we slept outside on the sand. It was so hot. And it was lovely. It was really, really good. Really enjoyed the mountains.
Is English widely spoken there?
Fortunately, I speak French, so I did use French. But I think, yeah, you can get away with speaking English.
But obviously, French would be more useful.
In that country, definitely.
In Morocco.
Yeah. It's the second language.
Right.
Yeah.
What about Spanish? Would that help you much in Morocco?
A lot of them do speak Spanish. It's true. Yeah. Especially, the touristy, there's a lot of tourism, especially in Marrakesh. So they're very savvy. They know just the right amount of each language to get by.
Well, Nicola, thank you very much for coming on the show and being a special guest. We've thoroughly enjoyed speaking to you. And where are you off to for your holidays this year? Do you have any plans?
This summer? Mm-hmm. No plans yet. Maybe I will be, I don't know, we'll see. Maybe I will do that voluntary work this summer.
Good idea. Rosa, any holiday plans?
Well, I'm very interested in Nicola's story because I'm going to Morocco in a couple of days myself.
Good
That's
luck.
Really interested.
In a couple of days?
In a couple of days I'm going there.
How long are you going for?
For about a week. I'm planning to perhaps go to Marrakesh myself and Fez, I've heard, is nice. Mm-hmm. And Essaouira, I think it's pronounced. Safa or Sifa.
Essaouira.
Essaouira, sorry. Essaouira. And see the Atlas Mountains a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't want to discourage our listeners. Morocco is a very nice place, but no airport for 5 days is going to be nice.
Have you got a visa organised?
I don't need a visa, do I?
You definitely don't. You don't. You can ask me for every country in the world if you need a visa or not, and I'll let you know.
Well, bon voyage. Have a wonderful flight. Thank you both for being here. Thank you to everybody out there listening, and we'll see you all in the next episode. So it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from Nicola.
And it's goodbye from him.
Goodbye.